everyone. Welcome back to season two of Gateway Episodes. This is a podcast where we look at TV shows and decide if they are something that we want to get into based on one episode of that show. For this season, season two of Gateway Episodes, we are specifically looking at limited series, and today we are going to be looking at one of my all-time favorite limited series, Midnight Mass. I am Derek McDuff, and I am joined today by a special guest, Eddie Thompson, who I introduced to the show. Eddie is the creator and writer for the site Why We Watch. How is it going, Eddie?
It's going well. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you for being on. Real fast before we get into it, what can you tell the people listening about yourself?
Like you said, I have this website, Why We Watch, which is just a little place where I do some video reviews. I also started doing some video editing of fan-made movie trailers. A recent project was a fan-made commercial for one of the streaming platforms, just something to kind of play around with. But it is mostly reviews, and the last thing I wrote about was the new Batman.
Nice, nice. You're kind of the perfect guest to have on, because this is, it looks like you write about a good amount of genre kind of fiction. Is that true?
I'd say it's definitely a lot of superhero stuff, enough that I dedicated a tab to it, that and animation. And then it does kind of vary a little bit from there, just depending on, you know, if something just seems like it's worth writing about or making some kind of trailer for or something like that.
Nice. Well, yeah, so I introduced you to the show Midnight Mass, and specifically had you watch the episode Book 3, Proverbs. So I just wanted to get kind of, to start off here, your general thoughts on the show.
Yep. Oh, one thing I forgot to ask, how are we approaching stuff like spoilers? I mean, there's obviously a bunch of stuff I don't know, but also still, but then also, like, how much maybe is already, you know, given away with the first three or this one, and you know what I mean?
Yeah, probably anything like in the first three is fair game, but after that, we'll steer clear of spoilers.
Okay, good. Well, I just saw this one, so it should be good.
There you go. Yeah.
So this looks like a really great show. Trying to think. The thing that caught my interest really quickly, partially because it's been in the news, is how it opens similarly to the first episode of Daredevil with the confession.
Yes, yeah.
Yeah. Actually, was there anyone on the other side of his confession? Or I'm assuming no, actually.
I think not. I think he's just, the idea is he's directly confessing to God since he's the priest. I wasn't sure if he was confessing to the angel or if there was no one, the quote-unquote the angel. But I think that is a really interesting framing device for this episode specifically. I didn't even put together the connection to Daredevil, but that is really good, and I think it's a really good way to kind of get you into this story that is only really present in this episode. But yeah, go ahead and continue.
Okay, I guess that's the next thing. I wouldn't have described that guy as an angel. Thought very directly it may have been Satan or something along those lines. You're talking about the character at the end, right? In the cave.
Yeah, the character that you meet in the end, that the priest who, you know, you find out in this episode is actually Paul. He calls himself Paul in the first couple episodes, but then you find out in the course of this episode that it is actually Pruitt, Monsignor Pruitt, who has been given new youth through this creature, which is, I don't think they ever say vampire, but is very heavily implied to be a vampire with the blood and him drinking the blood and the ritual he kind of does where the vampire, as Pruitt refers to him as an angel, kind of has him drink the blood from his wrist. So it's interesting because it draws on a lot of just kind of a lot of parallels between the Bible and kind of like how terrifying it is at times, and just kind of like the way you actually look at the language, the way like things like angels are described, are actually have a lot in common with modern horror tropes and the you know, vampire tropes, and Mike Flanagan draws on a lot of that for sure.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. And for the people who, like myself, may not be too up on that stuff, he still grounds it in other things. Like, was he, what he was pouring into a flask, was that alcohol or blood or something along those lines?
So yeah, in the first, you're kind of supposed to think it's alcohol because it's kind of supposed to be the wine, the sacrament, but then it is literally the vampire's blood. You kind of find out, it's hinted at here and then confirmed, I think, in the next episode, but it's very heavily hinted at. And that is another one of those parallels, because in the Catholic Church, I'm not Catholic, but I do know, like, you know, we do, growing up as a kid, you know, when I went to church, they had the same thing of the sacrament, and it's where they say, oh, this is the blood of Jesus. And in the Catholic Church, they say that it is literally, like, when you drink the blood of, or drink the wine, it literally transforms into Jesus's blood. It's more of a metaphorical thing in the Protestant side of that. But that kind of draws on, like, oh yeah, this metaphorical blood that kind of is supposed to become literal blood is literal blood in this, that is having these effects on people, where you see how when he is an older man, through his story, he tells the story about him being in the cave and drinking the first time he drinks that blood, and it like has this regenerative effect on him. And, you know, you kind of see the miracle that happens at the end of this episode, and you're like, how much, what is going on there? And it's kind of hinting at, we won't go into spoilers really beyond this episode, like we were saying, but, you know, that the things that he's bringing to the town are, through the blood or through other methods, are kind of having an effect on, oh, I'm sorry, I guess it's the beginning of this episode, you realize that, that she has just walked, because it opens with a character who the first two episodes is paralyzed, and then in this one, it starts off with her having, the last episode ends with her walking, and then this picks up right after that. So that was one thing I wasn't sure if it was super clear with you jumping in here on this episode, but she was paralyzed, and then she has that whole scene where she goes back and talks to Joe about how he had paralyzed her, and now she's learning to walk and stuff. So what did you think of all that?
Yeah, I wasn't sure if I caught... Yeah, I'm trying to think back if I did see her actually paralyzed, or how quickly that was kind of picked up on with that with the episode I saw. So, that was really interesting. I think the only thing I really kind of miss, and people will really miss jumping in on three, is kind of some questions on the full extent of what Paul can do and can't do, and also those costs of it. I'd say everything else is pretty well filled in for the most part.
Yeah, and that's something that kind of, even the first two episodes really don't get into. It's kind of about setting an aesthetic and introducing the characters and the setting. And that's really the first thing that he does, is kind of the first quote unquote miracle is Lisa being able to walk after seeing her in the chair. This is the episode where really you start to see things being able to happen. There's hints of this kind of demonic, angelic, vampiric creature in the first two episodes, but you don't really see him or understand what is going on or where he came from until now. And you don't really know, you know, what is going on with Paul/Pruitt until this episode. So this really does kind of kick off the whole rest of the show here.
It's interesting, because that's another, maybe that's just kind of a limited series model, like, depending on the episodes, like, three or four in, so I start to really, like, do more than drop hints, because that's another Daredevil thing. In Kingpin, three episodes in, probably similar for a lot of those Marvel shows, and, you know, limited series in general.
Yeah, that's something just, that,
yeah,
doing this series...
structurally.
Yeah, that's something I've definitely picked up on in doing this series, is usually it's episode two or three where things really start to kick off. Like, there's a lot of table setting that goes on in the first and second episodes typically, and then here is about when it's like you mentioned with this, or like Daredevil, it's like, okay, now we can really get things going. This is not to say the first two episodes aren't good, and they're definitely not worth watching. They're definitely worth watching, I should say. But like here is where if I want, I was like, okay, I was like, if I want to get him hooked, this is the one to do it. So with that, is this episode something that got you hooked on the show? Do you think you will be quote unquote stepping through the gateway and going back to watch this miniseries?
Yeah, I will be starting the first two probably this weekend, depending on, I have a couple movies I'm seeing, but I will be seeing the first two, continuing on from there. Definitely. My one hang up is horror is iffy for me because, there are just some I can't watch. Actually, one of them being, another from Mike Flanagan. I can't watch, the sequel to The Shining, or I can't watch The Shining or a bunch of Stephen King stuff again because it traumatized the crap out of me.
Yeah, and it's interesting you bring that up. Dr. Sleep is the title of the movie for anybody who's listening. And that's the only Mike Flanagan thing I was familiar with watching this. Oh, real fast, I should also say that's awesome. I'm really glad you're getting into this because that's kind of the whole crux of the show. So I'm really glad that it worked. But yeah, I like I said, I love this show. But yeah, I knew Flanagan had done a couple horror series on Netflix. I thought Dr. Sleep was a pretty serviceable film. Not my favorite horror by any chance. Horror is a genre that I'm sort of into, but it's not like by any means like my favorite. Like one of my co-hosts on my other show is much, much more of the horror guy. So I was never really super invested in going into watching his house, Haunting of Hill House, or any of those haunting Netflix shows that he's done. But when I found out the general theme of this movie, which was actually when I was with my two co-hosts at Universal this past Halloween, and we were doing one of the Haunting on Hill House or whatever mazes, and we were talking about Flanagan, and they mentioned, oh, Midnight Mass is this show that kind of, it's about horror, but it's also really about religion. And that's something that always really interests me when these shows and movies kind of take this, like, look at religion through a different lens, a horror lens or a sci-fi lens. Lost is my all-time favorite show, and all the religious and philosophical themes that go into that are always really interest me in the way people engage with religion. And I think this show does a really good job of that, and specifically of the Catholic Church, the way Mike Flanagan being himself a lapsed Catholic and me being, you know, a semi kind of lapsed Christian. This is, you know, something that resonates with me, but he also has a very, very prominent figure who is a Muslim. There is the kind of character who, Riley, who is sort of, I feel like, a mouthpiece for Flanagan, is he is a relapsed Catholic as well. Then there's some really interesting religious themes and debates that get touched on in this. But so I wonder if any of that resonates with you at all.
It does. So I went from Episcopalian to agnostic. And the reason for that really was kind of growing up on a lot of comedians that, you know, kind of ripped apart Christianity because of, Republicans, basically. And, well, you know how that goes.
Yeah.
So, I assume.
George Carlin had some good points.
Carlin, Robin Williams, Seth MacFarlane kind of shaped my perception of religion for a long time. But then, you know, after that, growing up more, trying to see that was really just a bad morphing of the worst kind of people, seeing how this stuff can help people, made me more open to, you know, looking at Let It Through a more critical lens. So stuff like, I haven't done a review of it, but I really want to. This reminded me of The Devil All the Time. And have you seen that?
I haven't. And is that about religion too? Because I wasn't even aware of that.
Robert Pattinson plays a preacher who is very much, well, it's not televangelist, because that's, I guess, not really a thing yet. This is a small community like the one in this show, but he's, you know, using religion for his own personal gain. But the other thing about the show is it does show it, the way I would describe it is the good, the bad, and the ugly side of religion. Him, of course, that character being the ugly side, but then it does show the good side, the side that's forgiveness, the people who follow it really well, but maybe a little too well accidentally. I'm trying to think exactly what that scene was, but basically it does just show a more well-rounded look at religion and Christianity in fairly modern America. I think the show is takes place a few decades back.
Okay. Yeah, and yeah, this one I think does a lot of that same stuff that you mentioned, where it shows kind of the quote unquote the good, the bad, and the ugly of religion. And I think one point that Flanagan kind of hits on, something that I personally really kind of believe in and resonates with me, is he is like, yeah, religion in itself is not bad, and it has all these things that do so much good for people and gives so much hope to people, and you know, it has real kind of like personal spirituality is a really important thing to so many people. But then he kind of warns of the dangers of the organizations and people in power in these religions corrupting it. And sometimes they can be, you know, Bev Keane type characters. She's the kind of the horrible church lady in this, who is just so selfish and out for her own ends and can always find a Bible verse that will justify whatever terrible thing she needs to do. But on the other side of that, you have Monsignor Pruitt, who is on the surface like a good person. Like, I truly believe he is like a good guy who, through these religious dogmas, kind of does things that are very selfish, things that on the surface might seem like they're good, but they are actually deep down very selfish, and is able to kind of overlook his own evil deeds and things that he does in the name of a greater good. And I think that is really, really interesting, the way that the show kind of plays with that dichotomy, you know?
Yeah, there's definitely a lot more I need to learn about him to really get a sense of what you're saying, just when it comes to Pruitt. But everything else makes a lot of sense. I had a professor, I believe, who told me, like, you can take a verse out of the Bible and look at it either way, and for any subject, either way, there's something about it that you can use, you know, depending on how you use it.
Yeah, and it's there. It kind of reminds me of that scene in this episode where, you know, they're having that debate about, oh, should we have the Bible in church? And we have the sheriff who, he kind of has that quote about, you know, there's so many, like, you can twist the Bible and these verses so many different ways to serve all these human purposes and ideals, and it's really interesting. And one other reason I kind of wanted to get into that I chose this episode specifically is the first two episodes are really more about Riley. He seems like he's kind of the more point of view character, the more important character, whereas this one really gets more into Pruitt being kind of the central figure, with it opening with him telling this story and it kind of being through a lot of it being through his point of view. And I think that you can like probably have a debate about who is actually the main character of the show when it's all said and done. But I think this episode, he is definitely the main character. And I think a lot of what makes this show so good, and why Pruitt is, in the hands of a lesser actor, I don't think that he would feel as good or interesting as a character. But I think Hamish Linklater's performance is so, so good. Like, he's such a good actor that has really been slept on for a long time. But he's kind of having a resurgence recently between this and then also Legion. So I don't know if you have any thoughts on his performance or anyone else's performances in the show.
Well, I don't know what the hell he did to replicate a seizure like that, but I absolutely agree with you. Cause that shit scared me for, let's just say, personal reasons. So yeah, I will also be checking out his other work. The guy who played Riley looked familiar too, but I'm not sure. Do you know what else he's been in?
His name, I don't know anything else he's been in. Let me bring up my Letterboxd real fast. Hold on. Because, yeah, there's a couple familiar faces in this, but it's nobody who's, like, you know, really huge.
Yeah. Yeah, I'd say it's three. It's those two, the guy who plays the sheriff, because I know that he was in another one of the Flanagan shows.
Yeah, so that is Zach Guilford, and he... Okay, so he was in... I guess he was in The Purge Anarchy, he was in Super, and he was in The Last Stand. So he's kind of one of those, you know what I mean?
It must have been The Last Stand, because I still have to see those other ones.
Okay. Yeah, that's an interesting movie.
Yeah. It's the movie I'm thinking of. That's Schwarzenegger.
Yeah, it was his first film back after he had been governor. It's not a great movie. I actually, interestingly enough, this is kind of an anecdote I talked about in my other podcast, because we talked about the film recently, I Saw the Devil, but it was the first film that director had done, and I think his only film had done in America. He's a Korean director. Arnold Schwarzenegger's first film coming back, and it was I actually got to go see a showing of it at Dodge College, and I got to see an interview with the director and Arnold and the writer who went to Dodge. He went to Chapman College, Chapman's right film school there. So it's why I got an opportunity to see that. But honestly, was there any other things you wanted to touch on here? Because you know, we've talked about the cast, we've talked about the themes. What else did you think of it, just kind of in general?
Yeah, well, we could talk more about the religion, because it is interesting. The sheriff, whose name is still escaping me, and what did you think about him and him talking to his son?
I thought that was really interesting. I thought that was a very interesting dynamic, because he is in many ways very open-minded about religion, but also. That scene, and it's this episode, right, where he has that whole scene where he's talking about how he's like, you know what pancreatic cancer does. That is this episode, right? Yeah, if I'm remembering correctly.
That is.
Okay, yeah. So, you know, I love that speech he gives where he's like, that's not how miracles work. And, you know, he refers to God as Allah, which is, you know, obviously, like they mentioned this episode, like Christianity and Islam are, you know, they believe in the same God. They're like, quote unquote, cousins, as they say. In this episode, it's, you know, of the same faith. He talks about how Muslims also believe in Jesus, which is something that not a lot of people realize, which is something cool that I thought got brought up here. But, you know, that scene where he's like, that's not how miracles work. Like, he's not going to just, like, God isn't just going to, like, cure this person and let this other person on the mainland suffer. And after watching his wife die with this terrible disease that he kind of alludes to, that whole talk with the son is really heartbreaking. And he seems like someone who is open to religion, but he's also like, hey, I have been persecuted. You know, I have been hurt by people like this, so I don't trust them. And he is closing his son off in a way because of that.
Yeah.
I don't know. What are your thoughts on it?
Yeah, it's tough, because he is so much within his right to do that. But I think... the thing is, he does have to let his son at least try this, just because it is such a small community that, you know, he does need that social interaction, you know, take what you can get for one thing.
Yeah. Yeah. Cause...
But that's also very much outside even the religion aspect, which is kind of for me separate. For the reasoning.
Yeah, it's because, you know, he was kind of, you know, he alludes to, like, I think his son says, like, oh, you had to leave your precinct because they were racist, and he, you know, obviously has this experience with being kind of a religious pariah, and he's kind of almost forcing that on his son, like you said, like, this is such a small insular community that is very, very religious, and his son wants to be a part of this community, and he's in many ways, for right or wrong reasons, like, kind of stopping him from doing that.
Yeah, and that's the thing. It's for both kinds of reasons. That's what makes it really tough on both of them.
Yeah, and that's one thing I think the show does so well, is that with the exception of Bev Keane everyone in this show has like good and evil in them. They all have aspects that are bad or good, and they have the reasons for doing things that might on the surface seem wrong, and you can really relate to them. It's like, oh yeah, like this girl gets to walk again. This is she's been paralyzed for years in this chair. People are dealing with, you know, you have Joe has that really, really amazing powerful scene between her and Joe where she kind of confronts the person who hurt her. And, you know, I thought the acting between both of those actors, I don't know the other names off the top of my head, but really great performances from both of them. And you get such complex characters who you can understand, like, hey, there's this thing that is happening to us. There's these quote-unquote miracles that are happening, so obviously you're going to go along with it and maybe turn a blind eye to things that are a little bit suspicious, you know, like how Paul is like, let's bring this creature who you and I seeing him is like, that's not an angel, but he just is like, oh wow, this gave me this new youth, this new life. I'm going to trust this, give myself over and believe that this is a sign from God. And you know, when you get these rewards, you can kind of ignore the bad that comes along with it because you want the good. And these characters are deeply, deeply complex.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, agreed. Yeah, I mean, it's not just the writing for that, or it's not just the acting. It is also the writing, because I think there are scenes like that where it could be. Let's see. There are like cliche ways of doing that. It's very rare, but it is one of those ones that can pop up from time to time when it comes to, you know, asking and receiving forgiveness. So just everything about it was incredibly well done.
Yeah, a really amazing script. And I think, you know, it's something I've kind of touched on with some of the other episodes in this series, but, you know, this is I believe it's a 9-episode miniseries. And it's one thing that the miniseries format is really well equipped to do, is you can tell this story, which is more expansive than a film. You do get some time to build up these characters, build up these relationships and this island, and tell a more long-form story, but you also don't have to be like, okay, well, what are we going to save for season 2? What's going to happen later on? We can't, you know, that was one of the problems with, you know, look at something like Twin Peaks is, okay, well, we can't reveal who Laura Palmer's killer is, because then what's the show even going to be? And, you know, as much as I love the end of that show, once they reveal Laura Palmer's killer, it's kind of like, okay, well, we just got to come up with something else to do now. Whereas this doesn't have that problem. You don't have to worry about, okay, well, now that we've solved the mystery, we've unraveled what was going on at the end of this season, what are we going to do for next season, you know? That's something I think about, like, even a show like Heroes had. Heroes basically was one complete season, finished, answered all its questions, and then the first season of Heroes is incredible. Everything after that, in my opinion, is just really bad, because they just were like, all right, well, now we got to do something else with these characters that were only designed to do this one season. So that's a real strength, I think, of the miniseries. Did you have any thoughts on that and just miniseries in general?
I do. One show that I binged a few months back that did it fairly well was Ballers, which I think every season took more or less changed plots, changed locations, still the general, everything else was maintained, but they did, like, you know, they did find a way to kind of fuel it every year. But even that, I think there was only so much that they could do. They'd take some wild kind of turns into making it kind of bigger every year. So I think that was kind of one of those things where it really depends on the person for if it worked for them.
Yeah, definitely. We're kind of getting to the end here. Did you, we've already talked about how you're going to go more into this and you are going to watch the show. So I'm really glad about that. I know anything that you're wanted to touch base on about the show, or things you might be excited to find out or learn about what's going on?
Let's see. The one thing I did find really interesting, I didn't want to spend some time on, is Lisa and her parents. I do. And just kind of everything about them. I like how it is something that could maybe be explainable. I thought that was really smart way to kind of keep it open for the characters, for the audience, and just kind of touch on that.
Yeah. So yeah, elaborate on what you kind of were interested in that so far.
I think it just kind of makes it. I think it kind of grounds it and gives it kind of just a better. Keeps the characters grounded, makes everything a lot more, I guess, believable in the way everyone is reacting and how this is kind of taken. Because if it was like a miracle, this would be one of those things where kind of the town could blow up, be put on the map, something like that, something really kind of outlandish. So I think that's what kind of I think that's kind of what I took away from that and found really interesting. And then also the people who, like her parents, who do want to make sure that, you know, it's not something that they want to lose, at least in some sense.
Yeah, yeah.
Because really well done.
Yeah, you can tell they don't, you know, they've had dealt with this for so long and dealt with these issues that they don't want to be exploited or want her to be exploited. And they just kind of are like, okay, we're ready for this to just kind of be over.
Yeah. How do we know how long that she's been paralyzed?
I don't remember. It's been a few years. Because I know, I think it's been maybe 3 or 4 years. You know, don't quote me on that, anybody, but I think it's been about that time.
That, and a couple other things I was wondering about the world, like, where are they relative to, I guess, this mainland that they're talking about?
So I think it's hinted at they're kind of like East Coast, just kind of like upper, not quite New York, but kind of maybe, I'm not super familiar with you're probably a lot more familiar with the East Coast geography than I am, but just kind of like, just kind of off they're somewhere in the Atlantic, clearly, just kind of like, you know, one of those kind of fishing communities that you see in like something like Coda or something like that.
I've got to watch Coda, and I've got to watch, what's the other one, Mass.
I haven't seen Mass yet, but yeah, I know that's going to be really intense.
Yeah, because I listen to a lot of Oscar-related podcasts, and there's a bunch of movies I keep hearing about, and I haven't seen.
Yeah, there's a lot to watch this year, for sure. I just finally finished. Yeah. We're recording. Well, this will probably be out after the Oscars have been released, so people listening to this, you already know what one. We don't here in the past know what one, but I just finally got around to watching the last of the Best Picture nominees, but I haven't seen all the lesser, the lower categories yet. But
I still have to watch a bit of everything, probably.
But yeah, I mean, I could talk about probably Midnight Mass forever, but we are keeping this in scope to this one episode. For the show. So I just want to say thank you again, Eddie, for coming on. Why don't you tell people where they can find you and what kind of stuff you do a little more in depth. And I'll link everything in the description if anybody wants to check that out. But go ahead and give some people some details, Eddie, please.
I primarily do write movie reviews. They're on whywewatch.com. There's a dash between each word, and there's also a YouTube channel, and all that stuff is in like the header and footer of the site, and I can give you links to all that stuff. And then besides that, it's been a while, but I've been playing around with doing these fan-made movie trailers and commercials. There's a great community on Discord and on Reddit for the trailers that I can also show you, and they've been awesome. A tremendous help on kind of every project I've worked on. And yeah, that's pretty much it.
Okay, very cool, man. I'm definitely going to check those out. I'm very excited. You know, I've read some of your reviews, really, really good stuff. As a film critic and who's written a few reviews myself, I can definitely respect that. I can always appreciate a really well-written review, which yours definitely are.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like it kind of really varies depending on especially because I take breaks from time to time because I also, you know, work and whatnot. But thank you.
I get that. Yeah, I'm in the same boat where I'm writing and podcasting and working full-time jobs, so it's a lot. So I get that.
Yeah.
So yeah. But so definitely everybody check all Eddie's stuff out. If you wanted to hear anything else that I've done, as I kind of alluded to a couple times on this podcast, I do another podcast, my main podcast called Underrated. It's a film podcast where we discuss films that are, as the title would imply, underrated or underappreciated. So however you're listening to this, you can listen to that on the same platforms. You know, if you have liked this show, give us a review and a rating. That helps us get noticed a lot. And you can find us on Instagram and Facebook, all the places. Undercast Company is the name of the production kind of company that me and my friends do when we do podcasts. Or you can find my writing on Medium as well, just Derek McDuff. But definitely, everybody who's listening, go check out Midnight Mass. If you just watched this one episode, like Eddie, step through the gateway, watch the rest of them. If you have already familiar with the show, let me know what you think. But yeah, that about wraps it up. Thank you, everyone, and thank you again, Eddie, for being on.